Blog Talk Radio.
Today's episode of the A New Day Show. I am your host, Dynamic Daphne, and as always, it is an honor and a privilege to be on this broadcast with you. Before I get into today's show, which I have invited everyone on my social media, we do not have an invited guest today. However, I invite all my followers and supporters to be part of an open forum where you can ask me any questions you want to ask, and I'll do my best to have the answer. If I don't have the answer, then we'll talk about what's the next best thing. And while I wait for the call, some months ago I had started the book, What's Possible? And we do 50 true stories of people who dare to dream they could make a difference. And there are some stories that are remaining in that book, and I'm going to try and finish those up today if we can. But before we get into today's task at hand, I want to read two of the contributions from Celebrating 365 Days of Gratitude, and I'm going to read the entry for June 9th and June 10th. The June 9th entry is titled The Gift of Choice. While there are a variety of things I am grateful for, I am most thankful for the freedom to make choices about my life and the ability to respond to any circumstance that affects me, good or bad, in whatever way I choose. Since I cannot control everything that affects my loved ones or me, I am, at the very least, appreciative of the ability to choose my attitude, choose how I spend each day, choose how I will handle any situation, and choose how I will be a positive influence in the lives of others. This power of choice is something I will always cherish, as it provides me the ability to mold my life the way I dream it to be. I hope everyone can develop gratitude for this amazing gift we all share. And that contribution comes from Shannon Williams. The next entry I want to share with you is the entry for June 10th. Lessons from Motherhood is the title. A lesson from my mom. Home is where your mom is. A lesson from my mother-in-law. Meaningful tradition can be as simple as a special cheese spread, the annual mince pie, and Manhattan with the family. A lesson from my maternal grandmother. It's never too late to pick up a hobby. She started quilting at the age of 70 and hand sewed around 25 for her family. A lesson from my paternal grandmother, an outrageously huge belly laugh can cure almost anything. A lesson from my oldest daughter. I can spend a whole afternoon just laying on the grass, looking up at the trees, and the world will not end. A lesson from my youngest daughter. 5 a.m. snuggles are gifts, even though they are at 5 a.m. A lesson from my sister, who was my first contemporary to have kids. Relax. It'll all be okay. Thank you to all of you. From Meredith Leppett. Yes, if you're just joining us, you are listening to the A New Day Show. The number to call in is 646-915-8166. We want to spend today's show. I want to entertain your questions. And we just want to have an open forum, kind of a dialogue today. And until you call, I want to go ahead and share from the book, What's Possible. 50 stories, 50 true stories of people who dare to make a difference. The story I'm starting with today is Kate Atwood, Kate's Club, founder of a grief support community center. I'm not a psychologist or a millionaire. I'm only in my 20s, but I have what it takes to start a special place for kids who have lost parents or siblings. I simply created the place I wish I had after I lost my own mother to breast cancer when I was 12 years old. I remember my mother, Audrey, as a great mom. She was a teacher, a job she chose so that she could always be available for my brother and me. Whether we were in school, taking dance classes, or participating in sports, with my father and brother, we made a perfect family of four. Mom was first diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 6 years old. My parents shared with us, but to a six-year-old child, those words don't really mean anything. I have a lot of respect for both my parents because even though I can now look back and see that my mother's disease was progressing, they didn't let that intrude on my childhood. That also meant that it came as quite a shock when she died. I was in the middle school of Mrs. Kerouac social studies class when the call came over the intercom paging me to the school office. I knew right away that Mom was gone. Just the night before, I had rushed home from my little league softball game. To jump into my mom's arms, only to find an empty bed. She had gone into the hospital for the last time. I remembered being at the hospital and feeling totally devastated. As an adult, I know how that it doesn't matter whether it's a prolonged illness or a car accident that takes your parents. One day, your parent is not there. The next, she isn't. It's about as black and white as it gets. Twelve is a rough time for a girl to lose her mother. I was going through adolescence without Mom there to explain all the changes. Her death also came at a time when I was desperate to fit in with the other kids. Since I was the only one I knew whose mom had died, fitting in seemed even harder. My dad and brother did the best they could, but they were dealing with loss too. My brother lost his mother, and my father lost his wife. Suddenly, his lost unit had been glued together emotionally by one person has lost its glue. Looking back, I can see we all floundered through those years. I turn in one direction, my father another, and my brother another, not from an absence of love, but rather from the presence of sadness, grief, and guilt. To look at me, though you would have thought I was doing fine, and on paper, I was. I did well in school, excel in sports. I went on to college and after graduation started a career in sports marketing. I believe that if everything looked good on paper, then everyone around me would think I was okay. But grief is not visible. And everything was not okay. The dam began to break into my first year in college when suddenly I was in a new environment, 6 years of sadness come pouring out. Fortunately, I found a camp for bereaved children where I could volunteer immediately. I found working with the younger children at this camp to be comforting. And it helped to be with others who had experienced the same kind of loss I had. That experience also made me realize how much I had missed the kids of support, the kinds of support and camaraderie during my own childhood. That's where the seeds were planted for Kate's Club. Although I didn't see it at the time, I was too focused on graduating from college and starting my career. Working in sports marketing comes with some nice perks, including getting free tickets into sports events. I found myself organizing little outings for kids I met who had just lost a parent. As I saw how much fun and how beneficial those things were, I became inspired to take it to the next step. That's how Kate's Club was born. A lot of people probably wondered what I was doing. I was only 24, walking away from a promising career in sports marketing to start a nonprofit, something I knew nothing about, and certainly didn't have the deep pocket to fund. But I did have the experience of being one of those grieving kids, and I had the passion to create a resource unlike any other. Kate's Club is a clubhouse where kids find a community of support after they lose a parent or a sibling. I like to say that we are about 80% youth development, 20% grief support. In a lot of ways, we are countercultural at Kate's Club. There are no victims here, only survivors. We help these kids connect with each other and also connecting with their grief. And we help them reconnect with hope and community and fun. Kate's Club offers our kids a world where it is okay to grieve. This can surprise a lot of traditionalists in the grief support world. It also surprises a lot of the kids when they first arrive. They came expecting to be greeted by a matronly woman dressed in black. The image they associate with death and grief counseling. Instead, they meet me, upbeat, young, and dressed in pink. I remember the first family I ever welcomed there. I walked into the youngest sister's. I walked into the room to meet three little girls whose father had just passed away. The youngest sister looked up at the oldest sister and said, "She doesn't look like I thought she would." That's amazing. Yes, and Darian's takeaway from Kate's story is starting a grief camp was too big a project for Kate to handle at her age and experience level. So she asked herself, if I keep breaking it down, what level can I handle? She began to take in a few kids into sports events. Now Kate's Club is nationally recognized organization serving 100 kids a month. That's about you. What about you? Do you have a dream that seems bigger than your experience level? How could you scale it down to something you can manage? Each and every one of us can do our little. We don't have to always start with the big picture. We can cut it down and start it in different portions until we can achieve it. What an amazing story. Before I continue, I want to say, take time to say thanks to the amazing crew at the TV show Business Today. I was a guest taping yesterday in New York City. And what a phenomenal crew that they have. So I want to thank the crew, and I want to thank the host, Sandy Pope, for so graciously inviting me there and show me a good time. I will also be announcing to let you guys know when the show will be aired so that you can support me. So if you just join us, today's an open forum day. So call in 646-915-8166 and let me hear from you what it is you want to talk about. And after that, if no one calls, I'm going to continue on Free Shoes. And this is Blake Mycoskie's story. Okay, so we're going to take a commercial break.
SuperFastLinkBuilding.com. The biggest challenge for business owners and entrepreneurs like you is getting your site to show up on the first page of a Google search. It's been reported that Google often changes their search reporting methods multiple times in the same day. That's why you can't use just any search optimization company. The SEO company that you choose has to think fast and move even faster. At SuperFastLinkBuilding.com, we've designed and developed a unique system to start positioning your site closer to the top. Our complex system of websites and blogs, along with our proprietary algorithms, are pushing our clients' sites to page one every day. Your site will never rise on its own. You've got to do something about it. Subscribe today. SuperFastLinkBuilding.com.
All right. So we're going to go to Blake Mycoskie's story, founder of Tom's Shoes. Finding the perfect niche, creative entrepreneurs. I refused to look at a map or ask for directions. That mistake cost me $1 million, but changed the course of my life for the better. I wasn't just anywhere that I refused to look at the map. I was on national television. In 2002, my sister, Paige, and I competed on season 2 of The Amazing Race, the CBS reality show. We were going through well right up until the last leg of the game. That's when we came to a juncture where we didn't know which way to go in the fast-paced race around the world game. Paige wanted to pull out our map. No, I insisted that I knew the direction to go. We didn't need to look at the map or ask for directions. I wouldn't take the map for an answer. We went with my guess, and it was the wrong direction. Paige and I ended up losing the race by 4 minutes. It was painful to lose the amazing race by 4 minutes, especially when we had just spent 31 days racing around the world trying to win. I was bummed. By time I decided to try to get over my disappointment by taking some time to go back to all those countries that I had spent about 10 minutes in. This time, I would really immerse myself in the culture. I went back to Africa. And next, I went to Belize. Then I headed farther south, Argentina. That's where my life changed forever. My original plan for Argentina was fairly exotic. I wanted to learn how to become a polo player. I laugh about that now. For the first 3 weeks, I lived among the rich, the elite, and the privileged of the beautiful country. Polo players are famous and popular in Argentina, as NFL players are here in the United States. So, you can imagine there were some celebrity perks as well. My big discovery during that time was the alpargata. There is a type of shoe that has been worn by Argentina farmers for hundreds of years. In the last 10 years, they became kind of trendy in Buenos Aires. The polo players in training on the farm saw the farmers wearing the shoes and started wearing them too. Then the players' girlfriends started wearing them to the polo, to the pool and cafe. Alpargatas happened to be super comfortable, and I also found myself wearing them at the time. As my friends and I drove from Buenos Aires to polo fields in nearby towns, I started to notice something else. Poverty unlike anything I had ever seen. People living in trash dumps. People who didn't have any shoes. And who have cuts and infections because they have to walk over rocks to get fresh water. I grew up in middle-class family in Texas. I never really seen that level of poverty. So when I saw it for the first time, it really affected me. I decided I wasn't going to come all the way to Argentina just for 4 weeks of playing polo. So when the polo gig was over, I decided to spend a week volunteering in one of the local impoverished towns. That's where I first encountered children without any shoes. And it was during that week that I had my aha epiphany moment. I would start a shoe company with shoe style after alpargata. For every pair of shoes sold, the company would hand deliver a pair to a child in need. I decided to call the company Tom's Shoes. Tom's as in providing shoes for tomorrow. Now, keep in mind, I knew nothing about having a shoe company whatsoever. And I didn't know anything about fashion either. How clueless was I? When I got back to the United States, I showed my shoes to some girls. They said, oh, just would look, these would look really good with skinny jeans. So I spent the next week going through some stores, from store to store, looking for a brand called Skinny Jeans. Someone finally clued me in that it was actually a style of jeans, not a brand of jeans. I can give you 20 more stories about the times I put my foot in my mouth about shoes and fashion. But each time I learn more and more, I figure out enough to modify the shoes for a North American market. The original shoe had a rope sole and a canvas upper. I wanted it to be more durable. So I replaced the rope with rubber sole. Then I put in a leather insole so people can wear them without socks and their feet won't sweat or get stinky. And I produce them in many bright, fashionable colors and patterns. Most people told me that my idea to give away free shoes was crazy. It definitely did not get me any support from my financial friend when I started. That's when I bootstrapped it and financed the whole company myself. The usual reaction was, well, that's nice if you want to start a nonprofit. But if you are going to try and start a company, it makes more sense to give one pair away for every pair that you sell. My concept, though, it really based on my belief that by giving away the free shoes, we create much more good in the world and get many people excited about what we are doing, that they are going to feel compelled to tell somebody they know. The word of mouth means we don't have to spend all the money on advertising and marketing that most shoe companies have to spend. My dreams and vision are coming true. So far, Tom's has sold tens of thousands of shoes around the world. That means, yes, we have also given away many shoes. The first shoe drop was back in Argentina. It was absolutely amazing. It was the greatest experience of my life. I could hardly express the feeling. Of putting a new pair of shoe on a child for the first time in his life and see him run off and play or show his mom or dad or tell a child, though, through a translator, how she's now able to go to school because she finally has a pair of shoe. It touches me on the deepest level, a level where I had never been touched before. It's funny, when I think back on losing the Amazing Race, it was completely my fault, and I have apologized profusely to my sister. I figure I probably owe her $500,000, but I also know if we had won the competition, I wouldn't be doing this. I probably would have taken my million and bought a real estate and become a developer. I'm very thankful that something that has devastated at the time turned out to be a blessing. I find that happens regularly in my life. Finally, for all those who criticize men for not looking at a map or asking for directions, I have to say this time that stubborn move paid off. That mistake ended up pointing my life in exactly the best direction I could have taken. Darren's takeaway from Tom's story. Sorry, guys, the moral of this story is not that you shouldn't ask for direction. Rather, it is a wonderful example that some of life's biggest disappointment really leads us to greatness. I'll move to the next story, the birth of the Zingo Nation. PX Head, president of Zingo. I was at the wheel in a drunk driving accident that took the life of one of my best friends, Benjamin Hawkins. I could be in prison, but I received an amazing second chance from the most surprising place. Let me take you back to the night I made the worst choice of my life, June the 11th, 2004. My friend and I were home on break from the University of Georgia. It was a weekend night in Atlanta. No one had to work the next day, so we met up for a happy hour. We had several cocktails throughout the night together and had a great time. I didn't know how much I had to drink, but it was certainly more than the legal limit. Still, when it was time to call it a night, I got behind the wheel. Four buddies piled in. Benjamin sat behind me on the passenger seat within just blocks from my house. I made a turn and lost control of the car. I didn't remember clearly how it all happened, but I began swerving, overcorrecting the steering wheel. I completely lost control of the car. We slammed broadside into a telephone pole, the impact hitting right behind me on the passenger door with Benjamin, where Benjamin was sitting. He was killed instantly. What an incredible loss. Benjamin Hawkins was the total package. Witty, charming, intelligent, charismatic, a straight-A student, everyone liked him. He was one of the good guys out there. And because of my accident, he was gone. I woke up in the hospital, handcuffed to the bed. I was totally confused and couldn't figure out what was going on. There was a police officer there. He said, "Do you know Benjamin Hawkins?" I said, "Yes." He said, "He was killed in your car accidentally tonight. You're under arrest." At that point, my whole world stopped. One of my best friends was dead, and I was facing vehicular manslaughter charges and 10 years in prison. But before I faced my legal fate, I had to face Benjamin's family. 2 days later, my parents drove me down to Benjamin's hometown of Macon, Georgia. As I went up to his family's front door, I had no idea what I would say. I was terrified beyond words. What would happen? Nothing could have prepared me for what was about to occur. Benjamin's mother opened the door and grabbed me and hugged me. We both started crying, and I just kept saying, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." The most amazing thing happened that day. Benjamin's family told me that they forgave me, and they took their actions a step further. They wrote letters to the district attorney and the judge saying that they had forgiven me, that they did not hold any ill will toward me, and that they did not want to see me go to prison. It was the most amazing example of forgiveness, faith, and grace I had ever experienced. I could have been convicted of a felony and sent to prison for 10 years. Instead, I plead guilty to vehicle homicide and was sentenced to 30 days in county jail and 10 years probation. At the end of the court proceeding, the prosecuting attorney came over, shook my hand, and said, "You just got back the best 10 years of your life. Go do something with it." First, I thought I had to do 30 days in Fulton County overcrowded jail. That was a nightmare. I didn't know if I could survive, much less what I was going to do when I was released. There was many harsh soul-searching days as I wondered what would become of me. I thought I had a bright future working as an investment banker for perhaps an investor or a huge fund manager. My vehicular homicide conviction was removed those career options completely. I had no idea what to do. My dream was over. I was just hoping to find anything to do when I was released. About a month after getting out of jail, I heard about a new business forming in my hometown of Atlanta. Zingo turned out to be my second chance. Zingo is the designated driver service with a twist. Drivers take you home in your own car. Most people drink and drive in the first place because they want to have their car in the morning for work or for errands. That's why they don't call a cab or ask a buddy for a ride home. That's why people love Zingo. It's the ultimate convenience party as much as you want. Then have someone drive you home in your car. How does Zingo do that? By using a special Italian motorbike, the B Blasi, that folds up in 2 seconds and can be put in a canvas bag. All you have to do is call Zingo. A driver rides to you on the motorbike, collapses the bike, puts it in the back of your car. You hand over your keys. The driver gets behind the wheel, takes you home, pops open the motorbike, drives off into the night. Zingo does it all for about the price of a cab ride. I saw Zingo as instantly smitten. I could see the value of giving people an easy option to call for a driver rather than endangering their lives of dozens of people by trying to drive home drunk. I was smitten that I brought into the company and how now serve as its president. I am absolutely certain that we have saved thousands of lives, with thousands more to come. My real goal is to have Zingo running all across the country. I see a Zingo nation. As you can imagine, when you are serving the bar crowd and building a new business, the hours are crazy. This is the last thing I thought I could be doing with my college degree. But I truly feel like I'm making good on that amazing second chance. Nothing will ever bring Benjamin back or repair the pain that the accident caused his family. But if I can get Zingo running across the country and prevent just one family from getting a phone call like the Hawkins did, then all the hard work will be worth it. Speaking of Benjamin's family, at first, I purposely didn't share with them that what I was doing. I didn't want to cause them any more pain or remind them of that awful time. They had already given me amazing second chance. I didn't think it was also their job to cheer me on. I found out recently that his parents know exactly what I'm doing and were very pleased. They saw a video about Zingo and are spreading the word. Now, some of their friends are considering starting a Zingo franchise in Benjamin's hometown. That makes me feel better than I can ever describe. I don't know where Benjamin's family found the strength to give me a second chance, I did know that each time a Zynga driver heads out to get someone home safely, it's a tribute to my friend. Grieving, giving both our lives meaning and purpose, even as his life was way too short. Yes, feel free to call in if you have a question for me. And I am just working on what's possible. 50 true stories of people with who dare to dream they could make a difference.
Hello, and welcome to Dr. Daphne Clark Husson Radio Hour, and we're glad you're here. Hey, listen, get over to drdaphne.in right now and get your advertisement for only $10 placed on the International Bulletin Board. That's right, for only $10, you can have your message seen by our thousands of listeners. So get over there right now, drdaphne.in. We thank you for listening to the show, and we will continue with it now. Have a great day.
All right. The next story is from Andreen Simpson, and this story is called Smooth Move, and the move is spelled M-O-O-O-V-E. Founder and president of Smooth Move Senior Relocation Service. Getting laid off from my cushy corporate executive job is one of the best things that ever happened to me. Thousands face downsizing every year. I am here to tell you it can lead to a larger life with more meaning and purpose than you ever imagined. I'm clear of this. I was a successful executive, focused, committed, and all of the other things you learn in school that we need to get ahead. And I love the life of an important job, travel, expense account. You can imagine my surprise then when I was downsized out of the corporate leadership position, not once, but twice. The first time I had worked myself up over the course of 20 years from the position of clerk typist to director of operations for the National Health Insurance Company and was in charge of 300 people. I loved my people and my people loved me. Then the layoff notice came. One thing they didn't teach you in executive school is how to pick yourself up from the smoke shatter that used to be your career. I was left on my own device to figure that one out. At that time, I lived with my husband and daughter in Detroit. My job lost was an utter shock, but I figure I'd find another job quickly. Wrong. My prospects were bleak. And to make matters worse, my husband decided to divorce me. I had to get out of town. So I packed my daughter in the car and headed to anywhere, which happened to be Atlanta. We were going to have girl power and take on anything that came our way. I was able to get a sales rep job in Atlanta, and in no time, I was the top salesperson in the nation of another major healthcare corporation, then the director of operations job opened. I grabbed it and quickly turned the whole corporation around. But wouldn't you know it, a few years later, I was downsized again. This time, I hit the wall hard. I went from the executive life perks and income of being unemployed again. I was very depressed and remembered many days, sending my daughter off to school, then going back to bed. I did this not for days, but for months. I felt that my worth to a huge degree was dependent on what I did. Since I was not doing anything, nothing. I was nothing in my own eyes. So much for girl power. Instead, I felt like a meek little squeak. I knew I was finished. Then, a simple family event began to change my world. I started with my wonderful mother. Mom had moved to Atlanta to help me with my daughter as I rebuilt my life as a single mother. But once my daughter grew older, Mom decided her work there was done and she wanted to go back home to Michigan. She wanted help with the move. And since I was just sitting around depressed, doing nothing, I looked for the obvious choice. I figured I just took up a seniors move service, set up a seniors move service, and it would do it all. I needed somebody to help me sort, clean, pack, and do it with a sensitive touch. Newsflash, there was no such service. I had to do it myself. I learned a lot with my mom's move. Moving seniors can involve many steps. It's not just the packing and moving. There are also clearing, sorting, organizing, transporting, unpacking, estate sales, antique appraisal, donations, heirloom delivery, cleaning, prepping the house for its next life. There's also counseling old folks who came before, unfortunately, with changes. While I was doing all of this work, my mother was going to church telling all her friends, I'm moving and I don't have to lift a finger. My daughter is doing everything. Once Mom was settled back in Michigan, those same friends started calling me saying they needed help without even realizing it. I started my new business and new life. Smooth Move is the moving company that specializes in moving seniors. It took all the money I could muster from severance, unemployment, savings, retirement, and just plain scraping up to buy a 14-foot box truck to launch the company. But the business explored, even without advertising, the business has grown to 20 to 35% each year. I now have 12 to 20 people on my payroll at any time, depending on how many moves we are handling. Even better, I found my life purpose. Moving seniors is a very tender responsibility. It can be traumatic for people who are leaving and grieving for the home they have lived in most of their adult lives. If their grown children have careers and families of their own and can't be on hand to help, seniors can feel overwhelmed and admit, "I can't do this. I need some help." Smooth move is that help. When you ask regular movers to unpack, they take everything out of the box and leave them on the floor. We put everything where it is supposed to be. In fact, we don't even call it unpacking. We call it resettling. We set up a display of family pictures. We make sure the person knows where the television remote is. One of the trademark touches of this is make the bed. We like to make sure that when we leave our client, they can sleep, shower, and have a meal. We treat each client as if he or she were our own grandparent. Of course, there were many lessons to learn in creating my first company. I had the second service skills down from my corporate life, but being a mover, counselor, advisor, driver, confidant, motivator, a surrogate child was all new to me. So I also learned from all of the elderlies. For instance, it's important to involve them in the processing and keep them involved as much as possible. Also, I recommend giving a new window person 6 to 9 months to grieve and just to the loss of a spouse before encouraging a move, rushing elderly people to suit their schedule is a bad policy. If they refuse to move but put its variable option, get pastors and doctors involved. Advice coming from these respectful figures is more likely to be accepted. Maybe it's just part of human nature. Most of us don't like to move. I know I don't want to move past the life of a corporate executive. If Life came and moved me along to a better place. I like to think I'm doing the same for my senior clients, moving them to the place and surrounding them that's what actually serves them better. I could not tell this business. I wouldn't sell this business for $20 million. I get more pleasure than I can say, providing our seniors with dignity, respect, understanding, support. If I can tell, if I can help take one obstacle out of their lives, I consider it a smooth move. Here is Darian's takeaway from the story today. I love the way that Simpson has reinvented herself. Reinventing is really a greater, is really a chapter almost all of us eventually face. The opportunity would result from a corporate layoff, a divorce, finding yourself with an empty nest and once the kids are grown up and grow out. Eventually, even we each will face the time when the thing we did, the thing that defined us, goes away, then what? It's time to reinvent. It can either be the most amazing opportunity to build an even more meaningful life, or it can beat you. It's your choice. It's your choice. The next story we are going to hear is the do-good junkie. The do-good junkie. James Burgett, recovering drug addict, computer people recycler. I've been homeless. I've been hooked on heroin and speed. But on the way to find new purpose in my life, I've found a new thing to be hooked on. Recycling computers. And people society has given up on, if you look at my life beginning with my dysfunctional childhood, you could easily call me bipolar, drug abusing lunatic with a history of violence. I have become much more self-aware and now have better coping mechanism as an adult. My safety net has been finding that it's cool to be addicted to helping people. I now run an Almeida Country Computer Resource Center. I have a building full of thrown away people taking thrown away stuff and returning into something somebody wants, computers. My challenges started with a childhood that was severely dysfunctional by any standard. I bounced around quite a bit. By the time I was 17, I had lived in more than 17 different houses. My parents divorced when I was young. I lived mainly with my mother and a series of stepfathers, included one who beat me. I tried life with my father, which was much better. At one time, he was a successful software engineer. By the time I lived with him and my stepmother, he was involved in a cult and battling mental illness. You can see why, by my mid-teens, I was basically on my own. Perhaps you might understand the self-image, probably a pain I battled every day. Drugs were the easy answer. By the time I was 17, I was hardcore into speed and heroin. That went on in one form or another for many years. Along the way, there were sparks of hopes and possibilities. The first bright light was a chance to work as a seasonal firefighter with the California Conversational Corps. For the first time in my life, I had a great self-image. Everyone loves firefighters. Little old ladies will hike 3 miles in the middle of the night to give firefighters a plate of cookies. It was great to belong to something positive. That made the summer fantastic. I had no idea or desire to do drugs, but came winter, I would fall back into being really stupid again and doing more drugs. This was about the time I started tinkering with computers. My formal education ended around eighth grade, but my dad had exposed me to computers early, so I always been very comfortable around them. Contrary to what most people believe, computers don't explode them. You try to repair them. There are no more than 10 components, and no component will let you connect it to the wrong spot unless you have really big biceps and a small forehead. I began getting my first taste of recycling when I worked with the Maine Conversion Corps. I rode on their bicycle trucks as the person who would sort and throw stuff into the bins. On a darker note, I also started pulling discarded computers out trash bins. I would salvage 3 or 4 computers in various states of repair. From those, I could turn out 2 or 3 fully functional machines, sell them, and use the proceeds to buy drugs. Somehow, I was good enough at this to start a little business called counterculture computers. My motto was, no suit, no tie, no bull. One day I receive a call from a daycare center saying it had just received a donation, a big donation of used computers, but needed them fixed. The deal was I could fix up the best ones for the daycare center for free and keep the rest of the parts for my own business. Somewhere along the way, more requests like this came in. I had no intention at any point of going into do good business. I thought I would just help out the folks on that short list and shut it down. But one of the local community papers did a story in the Sunday edition about my project at the daycare center. The next morning, I was awakened by a call from a software company. The representative said he had read about me in the paper, like that he saw, and asked if I wanted a couple hundreds of computers. I accepted, not realizing the scale of what I was taking on. My wife and I were living in a two-room bungalow at the time, and that's where I worked on the computers too. I got to the point where we had to create a small pathway to get to every part of the two room. My wife is an incredible patient woman, but even she had it up to this point. She told me I had to get somewhere real with all this stuff. I called around Marine Corps country looking for a storage company that would work with me, one that would let me replace the usable light bulbs with a socket adapter so I could work in the space. Storage companies would like to be paid more for electric bill, but I finally found out the storage company basically subsidized my operations by paying for the electric. Suddenly, I had a nonprofit with a small staff helping people with needed computers, but couldn't afford them. More newspaper stories came out. More donations started to come in. We had to keep renting bigger storage space. The company finally burst its seams. I realized we needed to take a huge step of renting an industrial space. I went for 1,000 square foot and called it the barn because I thought that was huge. The first time I walked in, I said, we'll never fill this space. 2 weeks later, we were already negotiating for more space in the building. Things continued to explode. The company now has a county recycling contract. The exact revenue and materials meant rebuilding even more computers and give away. There was just one hitch. I still haven't completed cleaning off of drugs. For time to time, I would go off and have serious binges. I finally got to a point where I knew I had to make a choice. Wow. Amazing story, huh? Amazing, amazing, amazing story. And the opportunity to do good in the world made the difference. I have never been able to get clean for my own sake. I also have no interest in God or religion, but making a difference in people's lives is bigger than I. I could see if it's now and it's real. I can demonstrate and it's beneficial to the people around me. Because of that, I finally had no need for the drug. That was 1998. I've been clean ever since. Praise the Lord. The Alameda County Computer Resource Center is now one of the largest nonprofit computer recycling in the United States. We take in 25,000 pounds of discard electric each month. With this 3 million pounds a year of waste that isn't going into the landfill, from that we rebuild and give away at least 12 computers every week. The machines go to schools, nonprofits, underprivileged homes, disabled individuals, and development countries. We'll give computers to anyone who can come with a good reason who needs one. We place computers on every continent, yes. I can say every continent since I gave computer to a Chilean expedition that was exploring Antarctica. I don't just recycle computers, I recycle people. I hire almost exclusively from drug treatment centers, prison workers release program, and psychiatric work release program. There, some might see that they consider broken people. I see heroes. We understand each other and develop a tribe mentality. We do things other people think we are impossible, and we do it with garbage. The man who runs my warehouse has 9 felony convictions. In most places, no one would trust him with a burnout match. He's doing a remarkable job. Another guy has a history of cocaine addiction and is so tied up in various bureaucratic that I can't pay him any more money or he'll lose his housing. He comes here every day anyway and volunteers. On the day he is not allowed to work, the guy who handles all of the community collection feels events, hears voices. He is the best guy I ever had on this job. When you know that your periodically conceived false data in your head, you develop a talent with being focused on keeping track of the details. If I sit down with him and tell him what needs to be done point by point, it will be done perfectly every time. Each of the 18 men and women on my staff now has the same thing going on with them. Each get up in the morning because this is the best thing he or she can do. That would be my best advice to people who are battling addiction. Find something to do. Find something you want to get behind. It don't matter what you do, as long as it is something that helps you point to a new self-image, so that when you look at the mirror, you see someone more than a hurting drug user. It's easier if it's something you feel is doing good to the world. I never stopped seeing an addict, but now I'm addicted to doing good. Beautiful, beautiful. So we will continue in these weeks ahead. We have a few more stories that we would like to complete. I invite you to come by on Wednesday just to spend some time with us. And I encourage you all to visit me on Twitter and also on Facebook. And also, this show comes on Wednesday. And if you are in the Bridgeport area, my TV show comes on SoundView at 12:30. In Danbury, we are on Wednesday at 8:30. And on Wednesday at 11:30. And on Monday at 8:30. We are on over in Cromwell Monday at 7:30. And Saturday at 7 p.m. in Newtown, and Thursday at 11. So I look for your support, and drop me a message. Inbox me here and let me know how you're doing and what the show is doing for you. Thank you for your support, and have a fantastic, fantastically blessed week. Stay blessed.
for showing me, hallelujah, and directing.